New York City is facing its worst housing shortage in decades, in part because of overly restrictive zoning rules. Meanwhile, the housing that has been built is concentrated in just a few areas. As a result, there aren't enough homes for New Yorkers to live in. Many neighborhoods are closed off to housing opportunity, and the cost of housing keeps rising. But in December, the New York City Council approved a plan called City of Yes, a sweeping set of reforms proposed by the Adams administration designed to modernize the city's zoning laws to allow more housing across neighborhoods, projecting the creation of 80,000 new homes over the next 15 years. Today, we're joined by Basha Gerhards, REBNY's Senior Vice President of Planning and our resident zoning expert. Basha will help us unpack what City of Yes means for the future of New York. Basha, thanks for being here. Let's get real about City of Yes.
Thanks for having me today.
Zoning, admittedly, is not a very sexy topic, but it's really important. Why does City of Yes matter for every New Yorker?
You're right. It's a good topic to have in the morning after you've had your first cup of coffee or maybe your second cup of coffee. Zoning essentially is all about the rules that establish what you can build and where and what you can put inside of that building. And if for anyone who comes to New York, whether you're a visitor or a longtime New Yorker or a lifetime New Yorker, and you're looking around and you're wondering, why is that building that shape in this location and why can't it have something that I really want to have there, or why does it have this thing that I really love there, that's really fundamentally part of and a function of the zoning resolution.
Okay, that makes sense. So tell me a little bit about the history of zoning and why it's important for zoning to be updated and kept current.
So for the City of New York, we were one of the first municipalities to establish a zoning resolution in 1916, following actually Ohio. So for those who like to ding Ohioans coming to New York City, we actually copied from them in 1916. But the zoning resolution we use today dates back to 1961. It's been continuously amended since. And in 1961, the priorities for New York City were quite different. The idea was everyone was going to drive everywhere to everything. It was really predicated on this idea uses should be separate, not necessarily looking to foster mixed-use neighborhoods, which when we think about what thrived the most during the pandemic, it was our mixed-use neighborhoods where there was a mix of commercial and retail and residential and the community facility uses that we rely on as New Yorkers. 1961 zoning wasn't about that. And I think in other ways, the 1961 zoning also memorialized really historic uses for New York City and segments of the industry, whether it was segments of manufacturing like the Garment Center or other things that when we look at what our manufacturing base looks like today is very different.
Very different indeed. I'm sure there are many, but can you tell me about one of the rules in that 1961 zoning resolution that illustrates just how out of date these were before City of Yes?
So some of the uses that are embodied in the 1961 zoning resolution, one of my favorite was called shoddy manufacturing, which you're like, why would you allow shoddy manufacturing? We have quality standards. There's OSHA. There's all these different regulations. And why would you label something shoddy as like something people would buy? But it was actually a very particular process in the Garment Center where they took the remnants of cutting, you know, for a wool jacket, for example, and all of that was brought to a location where it was boiled down to make new fabric, an industrial grade fabric for things like insulation and heavy grade blankets and things like that.
Interesting. Definitely not needed today.
There's a lot of rules around doing that type of melting at those types of temperatures that would not be permitted today. But that was still in the zoning resolution as of 2023.
Crazy. So City of Yes is a major update to these zoning rules. Can you explain what it is and how it came to be?
So City of Yes refers back to a speech that Mayor Adams gave, I want to say a little over 2 years ago now, at a breakfast in front of business leaders and public policy makers, saying the zoning resolution, again, this one that we've been using since 1961, is so outdated that a supermarket cannot expand, that businesses that want to grow and thrive in New York City are having a hard time finding which storefront they can operate under, or the same type of store. So say your favorite coffee shop is operating under different rules in different neighborhoods, even though it's still coffee. And so this was really about modernizing the zoning resolution and bringing us forward as a city and what we were going to need moving prospectively.
There are three zoning text amendments in the plan: City of Yes for carbon neutrality, economic opportunity, and housing opportunity. Let's break them down. What do each one of them say, and what changes are they going to lead to?
For City of Yes, there were, as you mentioned, there's three different components. So the first one felt the easiest because it was like, should you have solar panels on roofs? Yes. Yes, we should do that. We have lots of tall buildings. We have access to sun for most of the year. That's 100% something we should do. The zoning resolution in a lot of ways precluded that. Again, going back to this idea of it regulating uses, what can be put where and what the shape of the buildings, it didn't allow for something like solar panels on roofs across like the city. So carbon neutrality, City of Yes for Carbon Neutrality was focused on things like that, allowing building walls to be thicker so they could be more insulated and retain heat and cooling better. The second City of Yes text amendment was called City of Yes for Economic Opportunity. And this was focused on those retail pieces I referenced earlier, and you know, allowing a supermarket to expand without having to come in and change their local zoning, that they would just be permitted to go ahead and do that and grow the supermarket footprint and allow for more fresh food, fruit and vegetables to be sold there, and allow for similar rules to be across all, I would say, local retail districts, so a coffee shop could expand without having to figure out new rules or new codes. So that was pretty important from a retail brokerage perspective in terms of cleaning a lot of things up. The third one, housing opportunity, is the one that's been in the news most recently. It's the last of the three and was the one that was approved by the city council just in December.
Yes, this is maybe the most sweeping of the three. Can you explain what it means, what it says, what people can expect to see change?
So housing opportunity, and I would say in combination, all three of these text amendments fundamentally have modernized and are the largest rewrite of the zoning resolution since we established the 1961 code. And so this is really important from a perspective basis in terms of modernizing the rules that shape our city and, again, allow what you can build where. And when it comes to housing, I would say not only were our rules outdated in terms of office to residential conversions, which were severely constrained to only very particular neighborhoods, but when you start thinking about things like affordable housing and what does it mean within that, that can mean supportive housing, that can mean senior housing, that can mean mixed income rental housing, all of these different types, and the zoning didn't treat them equally. And so from a public policy perspective, you want those things to be treated equally and have the opportunity for them to be built where they are financeable, where the city can purchase land or reuse facilities, and that flexibility just wasn't there in the zoning resolution today.
City of Yes is something that Rebney was really focused on and proud to support. But why is Rebney engaged in zoning?
For many of us, you know, Rebney is a old institution in a lot of ways, a historic institution, as it were. We predate zoning. We were one of the first, I would say, key stakeholders to actually call for zoning in the city of New York. It's really fun to look back into the history of the organization and see that we were a proud supporter of the 1916 zoning resolution. We supported the city when it was sued for how dare you say what can be built where and why, which when you think of how things operate today, well, of course you want predictability for what's going to go on that corner and what will go inside of it. So, you know, we've been a proud part of that civic discussion for the last 100 plus years. So for City of Yes, when we're talking about modernizing our code, our rules for building, and given the housing crisis we have, a 1.41% vacancy rate, I would say it'd be a dereliction of duty for us to not engage and put our expertise to the test in terms of making sure that the code was modernized, that it would be usable, that in rewriting the 1,400 pages of zoning resolution that we have today, that, you know, it's not just about typos, but our cross-references there. Is it clear? Can people understand it? And making sure we weighed in with that level of technical expertise, what I thought was pretty important.
Very well said. I want to talk about the impact for other members of the industry. I think after talking through these changes, it's obvious why this is important for developers and builders. But for agents, you know, residential and commercial agents, how might this affect their business?
Fundamentally, when we're talking about increasing housing opportunity, we are talking about increasing supply. And in, I guess, in broker speak, inventory, right? Our New Yorkers going to have more opportunities to live in different neighborhoods, to move into larger apartments or smaller apartments as their life changes or their jobs change or their family situation changes. And in a lot of ways, because the zoning resolution was an impediment to housing growth, you know, we mentioned earlier in the introduction, right, like housing was production was concentrated. Four neighborhoods were developed and were producing most of the housing in the last decade, just four. We have 59 community boards. Over half those were producing less than 200 units. So this was really about making sure this is not just about REBNY members building really big or tall or dense buildings in particular neighborhoods, but also allowing someone with a smaller home to say, like, okay, I'm now, you know, under the new rules, I'm within a quarter mile of a Long Island Railroad station. I'm going to put in an accessory dwelling unit or a granny flat or basement apartment, depending on your colloquial nomenclature and where you may be from. But like fundamentally allowing people to add a little bit within the tagline was a little bit in every neighborhood.
You've mentioned a few times that these zoning rules haven't been updated since 1961. Why do you think this is happening now?
You know, it takes, when we think about the zoning resolution, we're not going to see change overnight. And that, I think that can be hard for elected officials. They're hearing from constituents, I can't afford my apartment now. I can't stay in this neighborhood now. What are you doing for me today? And there's a level of immediate gratification in some ways elected officials have to be responsive to, because those needs are really immediate. But if we don't do the long-term work of modernizing the zoning resolution, of setting a framework in which, again, quoting the tagline that the city came up with for why this was so important, a little bit more housing in every neighborhood, then we're never going to get a little bit more housing in every neighborhood. So this was really, I would say, a foundational step in a lot of ways. Now, whether housing gets built, that's going to be a function of the tax tools we have available. It's a function of how other agencies are operating, the ability of HPD to continue to meet its financing goals in terms of moving forward with more supportive housing, with more affordable housing. But it's also a function of, you know, political will. A lot of conversation in City of Yes was really focused on the elimination of parking minimums and whether that was appropriate. And I think what was made really clear through a 14-month environmental and land use process just on housing opportunity was we are a city of neighborhoods. And the zoning has to be both inclusive and flexible enough for all of those different neighborhoods to grow and in some ways stay the same. And calibrating all of that is always going to be really challenging. So a lot of thoughtful changes were made by the city council to meet that calibration need. And now we have to kind of just take a seat back, so to speak, and see what happens. The hope is that, yes, this will generate more housing, but we still have a lot more work to do. We have an ambitious goal set by the mayor and governor of 500,000 apartments as the supply solve for our affordability and housing crisis. And City of Yes is just one small piece in all of that, but it's an important piece.
Looking ahead, I know this is long-term legislation and we might not see impacts right away, but what do you anticipate? What can people look forward to?
So a lot of the political discourse was around, oh my gosh, there's going to be this super tall building in my middle of my block, in the middle of my neighborhood tomorrow. You know, what I hope people see, and it's probably not going to be in year one or even year two as a direct result of these zoning changes when it comes to housing opportunity, but slowly over time, oh, there is a new multifamily building next to that train station. That one-story commercial strip now has apartments on top of it. And hopefully it does feel incremental. Incremental change is really much the business of the zoning resolution. It's not meant to bring wholescale change overnight. That would be quite disruptive. I think it would make a lot of people upset for sure. But also, infrastructure upgrades need to happen. There's a $5 billion commitment, including $1 billion from Governor Hochul, really geared towards boosting staff at the appropriate permitting agencies, allowing HPD to hire more staff, for example, for not just building inspections, but also their financing team. Similarly, for the Department of City Planning, for them to move forward with additional rezoning or neighborhood rezoning studies. There's money for sewer upgrades, and we want that work to happen first before additional housing is added in neighborhoods that are subject to rainy day flooding. That important work needs to happen first, and it will happen under the commitments made between the administration and the city council with an assist from the governor.
Well, I hope it doesn't take another 60 years for the zoning to be updated again.
Oh gosh, I hope not. But I would also think, you know, as industries change and retail environment change and as housing typologies change, that hopefully we can be a lot more nimble the next go around and not wait to keep shoddy manufacturing around for 100 years.
Well, Basha, thanks for being real.
Thanks for having me today.
You can read more about City of Yes on the New York City Department of City Planning website, which is linked in the episode description. Real Talk NYC is produced by the Real Estate Board of New York. Today's episode was edited and hosted by Grace Boak with help from Jason Ryan. Thanks for listening.